Hi, with Truth News Radio Australia on the 16th of January 2013. Welcome, and today we have an action-packed show lined up for you. I've got some news to run through, some really important stories floating around on our feeds that I'm going to go through in the first 15 minutes or so. Then I've got a panel, two esteemed regular guests on Truth News Radio, John Bursell and Josh Jackson will be coming on for the remainder of the show. And we are going to get into some really interesting questions that I've put together in relation to the gun issue in America, the issue of availability, legality of guns. But we're going to try and relate it back to more broader questions about what's going on in Australia, geopolitics, the stability of our own country, and what I think, or what everyone thinks, about the best way that we can actually preserve our own freedoms. Do we need guns? Do we need guns to protect ourselves against the government? Do we need guns to protect ourselves against a situation where there could be a foreign invader that may come into this country in the event that American power began to collapse? And of course, American power could collapse for several reasons. It could be due to war and or the economy, or it could be due to internal conflicts. And at the moment, we're seeing really the lines drawn up in America with the gun debate itself. And this could actually end up becoming the front line of a civil war. So I want to talk about that, but I want to talk about it in terms that are relevant to people in Australia and also around the world. So that's coming up in the second segment of the first hour of today's show. Now, before we get into that, I want to run through some breaking news in Australia. A story here that came up today on the Sydney Morning Herald: AGL breaks fracking pledge. Fracking is back on the table for Western Sydney after the coal seam gas company AGL reversed a pledge not to use the controversial drilling technique in the suburbs. The company told Fairfax unconditionally on December 27 that it would not use fracking in its planned 66-well drilling program between Liverpool and Campbelltown. And of course, for those who aren't aware of the term, fracking is a controversial drilling method linked to water pollution. It's a way of getting gas out of coal seams that involves water. They fracture the coal seam with water, and that actually pushes the gas out. But it can also contaminate water in the ground, and it can also cause air pollution because of the stuff that comes up out of the ground as a result of this quite forceful process. Anyway, there's a whole lot of technical information about that, which you can get off the internet, and I'll put some fresh links up to those on the site. And of course, the reemergence of fracking in suburban Sydney is just something that is really quite frightening. And it's there's part of a big movement within Australia. A lot of people in the bush, farmers, environmentalists, have got together. Radio talk show host Alan Jones, and there's a big movement against it. But you know what? The government is just ignoring them. Is just trampling over them. Is just steamrolling them. And you know, the concerns that people have, the many health concerns that have been shown to be absolutely clear about this technique, are being treated as not realistic. Now, I'll just continue from the story here from the Sydney Morning Herald. The insurances of AGL, the Australian gas company, one of the major providers of energy in Australia, the assurances that they would not be engaging in this process prompted the Premier to defend them and to downplay any impacts of their activities generally, because they actually said that they were going to be doing some drilling, just not fracking. And this, again, I think is really indicative of the sort of level of deception and the kind of weasel words that you get from these big organisations. They said, look, we're going to do some drilling, but there won't be fracking. But anyway, they've now backtracked after internal discussions revealed the company would have to change its drilling plans that it has already submitted to the state government. And it now says it would prefer to use a horizontal drilling technique to extract gas, but it reserves the right to vertical drilling, which would lead to well stimulation or fracking. And here, quote here from their representative says, AGL's position remains consistent that drilling vertical wells remains unlikely. However, if any vertical well is drilled in the future, such a well will likely require fracture well stimulation to promote the flow of natural gas. In other words, we lied and we're just going to go ahead and do it. We said some things to make you feel okay, and then we just decided to go ahead and do it. And of course, I won't read to you the whole article, but we'll put it up there on the website. And, you know, the concerns that people have about the health effects of fracking are being treated, in my analysis, are being treated very similar to the concerns people have about, say, vaccines, are very similar to the concerns people have about fluoride in the water supply, are very similar to the way people's concerns about genetically modified foods are being treated. And, you know, and these are real, well-backed up scientific concerns with a lot of research behind them. And they're all lumped together and ignored and treated as some sort of borderline fringe conspiracy nutcase. With some of them, they do get more traction. I mean, because the Greens have jumped onto this bandwagon, of course, the Greens have a lot of weight in politics. Fracking is not completely dismissed. I mean, the concerns about the scientific and health concerns of fracking are not completely dismissed. But, you know, it's on the path towards that. And it would be great if we could get the people who are involved in all these different movements to understand the connection here. And that's very hard. And that's one of the objectives of this show, is to actually try to connect people and connect ideas. Because once you start to understand the pattern, you can say, yeah, this is the same pattern. This is the same pattern. You've got this predatory, ruthless partnerships of corporate and government wanting to engage in activities that will make them a lot of money and potentially poison people and ruin people's quality of life. And they steamroller it ahead. They tell you some pretty lies. They tell you it's all safe. They ignore the studies that say it isn't. And then they try to vilify the people who are opposing it. So anyway, I'll just leave that for your perusal at a later point in time. And we'll move on now with another story here. This is just an interesting one, not directly relevant to Australia, but still interesting in that it affects Australia. A very high-tech British drone is going to be tested in Australia. An unnamed British stealth drone that can fly faster than the speed of sound and go undetected by radar will soon have its first test flight in Australia. The 190 million Taranis, named after the Celtic god of thunder, can attack targets across continents, automatically dodge missiles and other efforts to bring it down, and independently identify targets. It can refuel in midair and carry weapons, including laser-guided bombs and missiles. Designed to avoid having to put human lives at risk on long and dangerous missions, the drone will be flown for the first time in a series of tests over the Australian outback early this year. Yes, well, it's great that they don't want to put human lives at risk. Isn't that sweet and kind of them? That we'll just use the machine without risking human lives. And what are we going to do? Well, we're probably going to, you know, take out some villages in Afghanistan or maybe somewhere else. You know, we're just, and of course, unfortunately, we may kill some kids. But yeah, no, it's all about protecting human lives. Incredible. Anyway, that's all being done in Australia. We're totally complicit. This government is completely complicit and bends over to the military-industrial complex. There's an awful lot of testing of high-tech military stuff that happens in Australia because we've got a huge landmass and a lot of stuff goes on in South Australia and the Northern Territory. Big companies like General Dynamics have huge operations here where they test out their high-tech tanks and all this kind of stuff. So unfortunately, that's another thing to realize about what your country is and what it sort of how it's being used, what it represents in the world. I've just got a couple of what you might call silly stories to bring to you. Now, one of them just highlights the level of the tangle of ridiculous legislation, ridiculous statutes that we've got to in Australia. Bushwalker fined for getting lost. A man has been fined after becoming lost while bushwalking near Lithgow. The 29-year-old from Victoria failed to return from a three-day trek. And the police had to get their, you know, helicopters out and various equipment, and apparently he's been fined. I mean, this is actually the way things are going. You see, you're breaking the law. I mean, a fine is a type of misdemeanor. It's a type of offence, right? And if you're caught doing that, well, it's like a speeding fine. I mean, they're all part of the same kind of set of legal measures, which put our way of life into just an increasingly restricted set of rules and a situation where everything you do is sort of people looking over your shoulder. You're losing your freedoms at an incredible rate of knots. And while I'm on the subject of ridiculousness, I just want to read to you here, and this is from a friend of mine, and this is not actually in the news, but this is something that that I only just discovered to my utter shock. In the western areas of Sydney, the government has partnered with the councils, and they're sending out these brochures, these kind of just like one-page letters, that suggest that you might like to have your lawn replaced with plastic. And apparently it's all subsidised by the government up to $1,500. I mean, this is an incredible rort. This is government money going into a scheme where these people will come and rip out your grass and put in plastic grass. And it says here, I'm reading the letter here, and it says, your property is pre-approved for up to $1,500 lawn replacement rebate plus free lawn removal. Yay! You must act in 14 days. Now, what's it all about? Well, it's all about one of these amazing new, you know, green sort of religious concepts. It's about saving water. Saving water is one of the most important issues facing New South Wales homeowners today. Yeah, of course, Warragamba Dam is like at 90%. I mean, we've had so much rain that, you know, it's just, we're swimming. Okay, we've got plenty of water, right? In fact, I think Warragamba Dam is over. I think it's overflowed anyway. But anyway, from 5 years ago when we were still in drought, that mentality has just locked in, and you are now being encouraged to have your lawn ripped up and replaced with plastic grass. I mean, you can't get more absurd than that. It's really like something out of a comedy. It's like something out of a black comedy or a satire. Anyway, I'll put a photograph of that up on the website because there's no link for it. Anyway, we're just going to break. We'll be right back after the break with John Bursell and Josh Jackson. Don't go away with Truth News Radio Australia. And my name's Hereward Fenton. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Seems to me like they want us to be afraid, man. Maybe we just like being afraid. Maybe we just so used to it at this point that it's just a part of us, part of our culture. Security alert on orange. It's been on orange since 01, G. I mean, what's up, man? Can a brother get yellow, man? Just for like 2 months or something? Goddamn. Sick of that. Mic check. The groove is thick, so I'ma rhyme like a lunatic. I do this shit with an unassuming wit. The corporation conjured up the bass and the tempo. My name is Liv, that's the intro, now let's go. The flow of life throwing strife into the mix, to the pick.
Hi, welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio. It is awesome to be with you today. And if you're listening to us for the first time, if you're picking us up on Logos Radio Network, if you're driving in your car or just happen to turn the dial on the FM dial there somewhere in Austin or Oklahoma City, welcome to Truth News. And if you'd like to find out more about the show, just go online and check out Truth News Radio. Put that into Google or go to truthnews.com.au and you can subscribe. You can get our regular newsletter that goes out and you can join our Facebook group. We're getting a lot of really good feedback from some listeners lately. A lot of people are really enjoying our interviews. And today will be no exception to that. I've got some fantastic guests on the line with me today, John Bursell and Josh Jackson.
G'day, Harrowood.
G'day, Josh. And John, are you there?
G'day, Harrowood.
Yeah, look, now we've got some big subjects to get into today. And I put down some notes there about what I like to talk about. But before I get into that, can I just ask you what your opinion about is like on $1,500 rebates for ripping your lawn up? I mean, what do you think about that?
It reminds me of The Lorax, the Dr. Seuss book, where all the kids, and there was a movie that came out where all the kids, all the trees are gone and everyone's got plastic trees and plastic things around them. And but I mean, what a ridiculous thing. What an absolute, you know, I think plastic is the most, in terms of environmental disaster.
Oh, yeah.
Plastic has got to be on number one up
it's,
there.
It's just right so horrendous. Top. I mean, it's so ugly. It's just against life. I mean, it's just, I'm actually doing this show in the far west of Sydney, where it's actually quite bleak already. I mean, it's quite brown, it's quite dreary. But to go to the next level of actually getting rid of grass, I mean, what kind of quality of life do they have in mind for people? I mean, what's your take on it, John?
Well, I don't know. I think, artificial grass in some situations is quite good, especially for elderly people that don't want to maintain grass and want to save water and all those sorts of things. So there's some argument there for it, but it's mostly about some sort of stimulus by the sounds of it. It's about, simulating activity. Take quite a bit of effort to remove grass, put down fake grass and some water saving, but the actual total energy analysis and all the rest of it that goes with it, like people have a tendency of hosing their artificial grass,
Really?
Who knows, mate? Like, I think you're probably right. It sounds a bit ridiculous, but, really the nuances of these sorts of arguments, unless I've looked into it, I don't really want to make a comment.
You're probably right.
You've got to vacuum it, right?
Well, who knows what you've got to do with it? I've never had it. I like the real stuff. I don't want falling onto artificial stuff. It just tears the skin off,
I don't like the sound of that.
And folks, if you want less stuff to water, just don't have grass.
Plant a vegetable garden, yeah, even better.
Native shrubs or there's all kinds of things you can do.
Yeah, go to a biked garden. You can do that for the whole front yard of your house. It looks beautiful. Put some natives in. Why not?
Actually,
yeah, native plants are designed to grow in these situations.
Are you up to speed, John, with the actual state of our water in Sydney? Because I think that the Warragamba Dam is full. Am I right there in saying that?
Last time I looked, which was before Christmas, it was about 86%, but okay. I'm not sure what it is now. As far as Warranoora Dam, which is our dam to the south that sort of feeds Wollongong and the Sutherland Shire, it's quite high. It's only around 75% or so. But the problem we have there is due to the longwall mining in the Sydney Basin, it's damaged the riverlets, very similar to what we were talking about with the fracking, the fracking can do. Yeah, so our dam out here is not so good, but that's not due to the rainfall. It's due to the damage that's been done to the riverlets that lead to it.
Of course. Now, actually, John, you've been involved in the coal seam gas, the opposition to coal seam gas in Australia. Have you anything recently come up? The story
well,
there
I
today.
Saw, I saw what you talked about today on Facebook. I saw Lee had put something up about that. Obviously she's a very hard fighting coal seam gas opponent. Now we were always worried. A few different talks I've been to and protests I've been to. We've always been very worried in the anti coal seam gas movement that the fracking was something that they were going to pull back from and try to make a political point that they were going to be very careful in our area in the south of Sydney, a very pristine bushland area. And we always expected that, that fracking would come back onto the table once the wells were in or once they were approved.
Yeah.
So we always thought they were going to do that, and that's why it was a stop coal seam gas, not a stop fracking campaign. In other parts of the world, they've tried to stop fracking, and then exactly what you were talking about, the corporations say they won't frack, and then they do frack.
Right,
so
right.
So we didn't get caught in that trap so much. So we were sort of expecting it, I suppose, yeah.
That's such an important point, because I think in most people's mind, coal seam gas and fracking is the same thing. They don't realize, no, you can do coal seam gas without fracking, but once they start doing it, they're most likely to do fracking because that's probably the most effective way to get stuff out and cheaper, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Unless you're worried about the pollution that you're going to cause, and obviously these corporations aren't worried about the pollution they're going to cause. Normally it's smaller companies come in like Apex Energy or other smaller groups, and they'll make the mess, and then someone else will buy up the rights to the gas, but they won't be responsible for the damage that was done by the other corporation. You know, so they always play these sorts of games. So, yeah, it's going to be a long battle. It hasn't finished yet by the looks.
Absolutely. And, I mean, what's your understanding of the state of knowledge and scientific research about the dangers of this for human health? I mean, what's your take on that?
Well, I mean, fracking is not a controlled thing. You know, when you've got a drill bit and you drill and you're drilling, you know how far you've gone with the drill. But when you're pumping water and chemicals under great pressure into unknown, situations, who knows what's going to happen? I think that's basically why fracking is so dangerous, because they don't know what's going to happen. They're going on a percentage basis. If they do this and they do that, then, you know, 99.9% of the time everything will be okay. But all they have to do is strike something unexpected and all hell breaks loose. They damage the aquifer, which could lead to, in our area, poisoning of the dam supply or the water supply for the people. Or they could, you know, cause other problems where the gas will rise to the surface through other cracks that they weren't aware of in the substrate. So, you know, it's like it's just one of those things. It's just a very profitable thing, coal seam gas. Mind you, none of the revenue is staying in Australia. It's all sort of already pre-bought by China and other overseas places. And the government's not receiving royalties. I know at least in New South Wales, there's no royalties to be received by the government for 5 years and possibly 10 years, depending on what the corporations tell them on how much profit they've made. So if they don't make enough profit, then it's research and development and there's no no money's paid to the government. So there's nothing in it for us anyway. So I'm not really interested in coal seam gas anywhere near me or my family or anyone in Sydney, because there's no real advantage to us, you know, to the process, except for a few jobs.
Right, yeah. Yeah, now, go ahead, Josh.
I just want to chime in on that. I mean, for me, the whole coal seam gas issue breaks down to a property issue. A private property issue, and because if we truly had a grip and a respect for private property, we would have insurances that if something happened to my property, I could sue the ass off of anyone that was responsible. And the fact is that the government has really sort of harbored these companies to be able to say, look, you're sort of not liable if stuff goes wrong, if your property is damaged in any way. You know, I mean, these people can just go onto people's properties and start testing and whatever else. And I think really it comes down to private property. And,
well, there's
and
actually two
rights.
Types of land title, if I could just clarify. And from my understanding, there's two types of land title. And one type of land title actually gives you rights, mineral rights, to what is under the ground, and another does not. And now, it's not – a lot of farmers and a lot of property owners are not aware of what title they've got. But if you don't have the rights to it in your land title – you have no legal basis to stop them from going in and drilling. We're going to break. I want to continue with this after the break. It's a very important subject. We'll be right back with Truth News Radio Australia.
Children, yeah,
back. You're with Truth News Radio. It is awesome to have your company today. And we're talking about coal seam gas. We're going to get into some other really, really weighty topics after this. But of course, this is weighty enough because coal seam gas and the industry of extracting gas from areas that are, you know, human habitations, areas that are quite densely populated, is becoming very common. It's being done all over the US. It's being done in Australia. I'm not too sure about other countries. Josh, quick question. What do you know about coal seam gas and fracking in Europe?
I should point out,
Josh, you are located in Germany. And actually, I have not properly introduced my guests today because they're well known to most of our listeners. But for those who are not, Josh is a long-time contributor to this show. Josh, with a background in media, animation, and high-tech stuff. And, of course, John, a...
Digital effects.
Yeah, digital effects expert. And, of course, John being an aircraft engineer. But aircraft engineer with long knowledge and extensive knowledge of aircraft and engineering and, of course, member of the group 9/11 Architects for 9/11 Truth. Very important. Never to forget that. Josh, you're not aware of what is going on in Europe, so I won't press you on that one. John, can you clarify what I said about the land titles in Australia?
Well, the way I understand it, most of the titles in Sydney, say, for instance, is Torrens title, and you don't have any right to the minerals under your land. You only own, you know, the first metre or so of your property.
Yeah.
You know, anything else that's found through exploration, you know, can be sought after. The rights can be sought after by the through the government by, you know, a corporation or a private person to you know, take it out of the ground because it's of national interest. You know, I suppose that's the reason we have those titles.
Interest to steal from your land. That's all it is.
Well, I mean, the access to the land, the damage done is the issue. I mean, obviously, there's been claimants and people that have locked their gate, you know, in different parts of Australia to prevent this happening. And they're saying, you know, they come onto their property, they put a gas well 50 yards from their house. There's certain rules on how close it can be to persons, actual where they live.
Yeah.
You know, and so these things happen. They come in, they destroy the property. The property's worth a lot less money. Now, whether the compensation is fair for that, I'd say no. You know, it can be as little as you have a well on your property. It could be as little as a couple of $1,000 a year to have that well on your property when the well might be making $1 million for the people that put it in.
Wow.
So the compensation is very poor, and there has been some work towards getting that compensation lifted. Also, with the fracking, you know, obviously we had a big win by, you know, the Liberal government that took over recently from the Labor government, saying they weren't going, you know, there was going to be no fracking, so there wasn't any problem because fracking is much more dangerous. It also uses a lot of water. The amount of talking about saving water on lawns, you know, with using synthetic lawns is just a joke compared to the, you know, multiple Sydney harbours that they need to do the fracking. To pump the water in, and then they get the water that comes out that's already had chemicals added to it. It comes up with all sorts of salts and other chemicals from the coal seam, and then that's put into pondage, and the pondage is very poorly controlled and is known to leak. Plus, then we have the problems with gas getting into the water supply, which we already talked about. So, you know, the whole thing is not needed in this country, in my view. It's, you know, there's areas of the country that are probably suited to it and it could be done safely. And I think that's fine if that's what we know. We still haven't had the Royal Commission into coal seam gas, and that's what we need. We need a Royal Commission so we know exactly what the risks are. In America, a country that doesn't have much oil and gas left, easy to get, that's running out of fossil fuels, you know, they make the argument there that they must have coal seam gas or their economy's finished. We don't have that issue in Australia, and what's in the ground can stay in the ground for a long time, and the technology can improve to a point where it is safe, then that's fine. So why are we rushing to get it out to give it to China, you know, for no benefit to the public? You know, it's just the whole argument for it is just it falls apart when you look at it in any sort of detail.
Yeah, and, you know, I also, you know, very strongly agree with what Josh said, and I feel that this is an abuse of people's rights to just have a peaceful life and a quality of life. The idea of engaging in something as potentially destructive of this, right in the middle of people's habitations where people live, where their children go to school, is just on the face of it, on a common sense level, ridiculous. I mean, if a landowner agreed to it and said, look, I'm happy for you to put the well there. And I know some landowners have agreed to it. Fine. You know, and again, it is about a property
issue.
Not if
it affects there's a possibility of it damaging the aquifer. You know, like, no, in my view.
Ah, well, that's actually a very important point.
Because that's a health issue. You know, and also there's issues around seismic activity, creating earthquakes, which has happened by this process. You've got a problem with leaking methane. Like, I can't remember what percentage it is, but there's a considerable amount of leakage with these systems.
Okay.
That puts more greenhouse gas into the, whether you think the greenhouse gases are bad or not. Methane's one of the worst ones, if not the worst one. And, you know, the argument is that this is a better form of energy. Well, sure, burning gas in your car is cleaner than petrol,
yeah.
But the actual process leaks, and there's lots of methane that gets leaked into the atmosphere, and it smells terrible as well. It looks terrible. It smells terrible. It damages, the land, for hundreds of meters around all the wells. You know, there's a huge increase in truck activity, increase in all sorts of things that damage the environment. And, unless there's a real good profit in it for the community and it's safe, then we shouldn't go near it. Why do we have to bring it to the city? Because the main reason is because there's a massive coal seam under Sydney and there's lots of money to be made here for these people, and that's why they're here, and they don't give a shit about the public, I'll guarantee it.
It's incredible. Yeah, look, no, and you know, good point about, I mean, see, a lot of this sometimes does hinge on the fact that some landowners have agreed to it and some landowners think it's okay. And I know the gas companies make a big deal about that. And they say, look, we've got all these happy people that are making money out of it, and you can be one of them too. But we do actually have to look at the impact of this, the greater good. And I know that's a much maligned concept, but there is a real greater threat that we have to look at. And I think, you know, regulation is a twin-sided thing, isn't it? Because too much regulation in a bad way is actually becomes a form of totalitarianism. It becomes a tangle, like I was saying before. You just get tangled up in all of these rules that were enacted supposedly for our own good. But then when you have rampant sort of laissez-faire capitalism without any regulation, you get coal seam gas. And it's like we're caught between two extremes, and we just never seem to be able to get it right, because as soon as we go down the path of trying to regulate, we end up with ridiculous regulations.
Yeah, but it really comes down to property rights. When I buy a piece of land, I buy a piece of land. It should go down in the center of the earth. I don't care. I mean, and if someone destroys anything, or even if it doesn't go to the center of the earth, if anything is destroyed, if my land goes down in value whatsoever, I should be able to get recourse for that up to the exact, I should be able to sue the pants off it. And that's where environmentalism really has to move forward, because like you said, Herod, if you start regulating, all you're doing is using the force of the state to stop private enterprise, which is generally pretty, I mean, there's other ways around it as well. I mean, you could join the company, you could buy shares in the company as a whole, like build a massive campaign to buy shares to then vote down certain things. The problem there is you get other companies stepping in and saying, oh, look, there's a gold mine there, because there's no rights for underneath it. There's no real true property rights here. So they'll just come in and take it instead. And so it comes down to property rights. It comes down to a basic human right is if you, especially with the ridiculous property prices of Australia or around the world, that if you're paying $1 million for a piece of land, yeah, that's your land.
But then you just opened a massive Pandora's box there, Josh, and it will take us several shows to get through this one, because as you know,
The whole argument here, we're just sorry to butt in, that Josh was talking about is fine. And we talk about the perfect world, but we're not in a perfect world. Corporations don't, pay for what they do. You know, they do what they like, and the directors walk away scot free. We shouldn't have corporations on this planet, in my view.
Yeah.
You know, that's a big problem to start with. So we've got
totally
corporations,
agree.
We've got property rights. A lot of the property is owned by the government anyway, or they've got, coven over it for some reason or other.
Indeed.
So, really, I think that that's why the CSG issue has been, if it's taken at a public safety level and the general well-being, I think that argument's working better. But the people who are locking their gates are doing us a great favour, because they're making them fight them in court, and that's where the information comes out, when the evidence has to be introduced.
Yeah.
And that's when we get to find out what's really going on. So good luck to them.
So it's an excellent strategy that they're doing.
Yeah,
and
totally.
I just wanted to bring up the point that according to the Native Title Act and the Mabo decision, etc., this country was, not the property of the British. They took it, right? And the native people here never gave their consent, right? So all land ownership in this country is not based on consent. Well, some of it is now with some of the agreements that have been made with Aboriginal groups, but, they're never going to hand over the prime land that they took. So unfortunately, that beautiful principle of ownership is undermined by the fact that all land ownership is somewhat fraudulent. Any quick comments on that?
It's a good point.
It's a great point.
Yeah. Okay, look, we're going to break and we'll be right back with some more breaking discussion. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Don't go away. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. It's great to be with you today. Well, look, guys, I would love to go into that subject of the ownership of land in more detail, but we have reserved another discussion for tonight. But I think it's actually a really important one. I mean, do you get my gist of what I'm saying there about the problem with land ownership? And I think this is all around the world, it's the same in every country, is that there never really was consent. Land has always been just conquered and taken and stolen. Just a quick comment from you and from Josh and John on that. Start with John.
Well, yeah, it has been. As you know, I'm a Dharawal man. I have links back to where I come from for 12,000 years, as I have Aboriginality, so I don't feel so bad about my Torrens title. I feel okay about
it.
But obviously, what you're saying is true, Harrowood, and we have to accept that there people steal land, and this happened all the way through history. There's an argument. What was it, Terra Nullius, that they said that this land was unoccupied? Yeah. That was the argument at the time.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you compare, the population of the Aboriginal people here compared to, say, China today, I mean, you could probably make an argument that it was pretty well unpopulated.
Yeah.
And it wasn't developed economically. Well, basically, that was because it was unsustainable. That's why the Aboriginal people didn't develop.
Yeah.
But anyway, you're right. And if we always look to truth, and without truth, then there can never be justice. And without justice, there'll never be peace, and we'll never really be content, will we?
Yeah.
So these issues have to be addressed. And I mean, they were addressed in part by Mabo and other people have tried to address those issues. I think most Aboriginal people have accepted that if they don't live where they, in the area of their tribe, that, they accept that, other people own the land, but the people that still live in their original traditionally owned areas, should be given that land back. That's for sure. And that's my point of view on it in a short answer.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really tricky one. I remember hearing a story from a teacher who was telling children about a family that lived on a property and, 100 years ago, some robber came in and killed the parents and two of the kids managed to escape the house, but they killed the parents, took the land and took the farm and they lived on there. Anyway, generations on, 100 years on, there's a new people living on there. The great great grandparents are long dead, but that family is still living on this property, and all of a sudden the great great grandchildren of the people that ran away find out and go back there and demand their property back. And these kids are like, what? We've lived here for like three generations. What are you talking? And what do you do? And ask the children, what should happen? And it was a quite an interesting debate on you know, because children have this this childlike view of morality and, yeah. and stuff. So it was quite an interesting concept. And then she said, "Well, this is what happened in Australia," and everyone went, "Ooh, wow!" Mm. But it's an extraordinarily complex. Very, very complex. Yeah.
And it's topic. Happened in a lot of other places. I mean, Israel springs to mind. Of course, you
America.
Know, well, yeah. I mean, the American Indians, of course, suffered horrendous trampling of their rights and lost their lands. And
we had 20-odd million people. It's pretty serious.
Yeah, yeah. And
they
of course,
were conned, and it was clear evidence of theft there, just like there was with the Aboriginal people. I mean, it's all quite well, written about if you choose to look into it. All the great invasions in history,
and of course this idea of terra nullius.
We sort of got to move on in a way, but yeah. if we don't, then you know, how do we ever? Where do we draw the line? Like Josh said, how many generations is it exactly? And that's why I go back to if the residents of the land, you know, for many thousands of years are still on that land. And it's been taken from them and they still live there, then, you know, they should be gifted it back. Besides that, there's not really much else you can do if someone else has occupied, you know, that area. It's really a war to get them off, isn't it?
And that's what's going to happen in Israel. I mean, it's inevitable that, you know, there's going to have to be some much greater conflict there before that's going to be resolved. But, and I was thinking about Australia. I mean, our current population is, what, about 25 million? Now, from the point of view of the Chinese, they would probably say, well, this country is unpopulated. They could even say it's terra nullius. You know, I mean, it's underpopulated.
On the same scale, they could exactly.
Yeah, that's so they could say, we're just going to come in and take
that,
it.
But that was my point, you know?
Yeah, yeah, it's a really, really...
But I was talking about the Aboriginal population, which is much, much smaller than what our population is today,
yeah.
in the few hundreds of thousands. And they could make that argument, but because the land was they were hunter gatherers primarily, and they did manipulate the land in certain ways, and they definitely had very defined boundaries of their groups within the Aboriginal community, and they knew their land much better than the white fellas know the land. They actually like really, you know, are connoisseurs of the land. In a real sense, they knew the land better than anyone would know it, and they had a greater right to be there because they were living in harmony with it from an environmentalist point of view. So, yeah, anyway, it's an interesting argument, but not one we're really ready for tonight.
No, look, but although the question of, I guess, what happens when a hostile and much more powerful force comes into a place and takes the sovereignty of people and tramples on their rights is one which is actually extremely relevant to what I want to talk about for the rest of the show. And I actually want to get back to that question about what might happen if some big country says, well, we want to just take a bite of Australia. But let me lead into this by actually bringing up the questions that I raised today with both you, John, and Josh. And I'll just quickly read through the questions. And the questions were... triggered by the furore in the US over, firstly, the Sandy Hook shootings, and then the response to that, which I talked about on the show, and I had Rochelle McCready on, who did a really interesting analysis of all the anomalies.
Yeah, that was really good.
And all the, yeah, thanks. And all of the, questions about that shooting that haven't been resolved, and those are still not resolved. And, I think it's very important. I don't downplay that. Well, I don't want to overdo it either. I'm just saying those questions exist. But then look at the dialogue now. Look at where we're at. We've got the government with executive orders now saying that they're going to pass new laws. And as I understand it, it's going to be something like the no-fly list, but it's going to be the no-gun buy list. It's going to kind of be in parallel to all of the other measures that exist that are already subverting the Constitution. It will subvert the Constitution of the US, but so is the no-fly list. So are a lot of things that they're doing, right? And they can do it with executive orders. And so if these measures are passed through Congress, you could just be refused to ownership of a gun and they wouldn't even have to tell you why. Now, as I understand it at the moment, if you have a criminal record or you're mentally ill or there is some other indication that you are violent or dangerous, that can be a reason not to sell you a gun. They just want to make it broader powers and potentially the reasons could be something you don't even know about. And this is a very common tactic. It's a very common tactic of overbearing, overarching totalitarian-style governments to do that. Just to, without telling you any reason, you're on a blacklist. Of course, this has resulted in a reaction from the gun lobbies and the people of extreme anger, right? And it's to be expected. It is to be expected. And, of course, we had Alex Jones launching a petition for the talk show host of CNN, Piers Morgan, to be deported in the lead-up to the current situation, where Piers Morgan was strongly advocating for very strict gun control measures. And we had CNN invite Alex Jones on to the show. And, of course, you know, Alex Jones is a great hero to many people and to me for all the work that he's done on many, many topics. I'm not 100% aligned with him on the gun issue. But when he talks about false flags, when he talks about state terror, Operation Gladio, the whole history of the way in which governments have manipulated threats to increase their own power and to disarm the citizenry, I'm completely on the same page.
But maybe that's why X as crazy as he does, you know, I always give him credence. So I sort of think about him as a warrior and facing this tyrannical evil, you know, and seeing Morgan as a representative of that, and that's what makes him so angry, and seeing a possible civil war coming and taking it from that perspective, you can understand why he loses his bottle the way he does, but definitely not the way I'd carry on television. And I don't think it's very effective, for the broader population. But anyway, he does what he does, and that's what he does.
It's not a subject I want to really focus on too much in this show, and I'll tell you why, is that once we start getting into personalities –
yeah,
everyone has their own likes and dislikes about everyone. It's a really interesting thing, as I've noticed, is that the media, our corporate media, loves to focus on personalities. And they love to get someone up on camera who's got personality quirks, because that's a free way of attacking. It's an easy way of attacking them, which actually ignores all the substantive issues.
Some of us have realized that, and we play the game in a way that we don't get represented in that way. But some people just choose to be who they are, and they're not scared to be themselves. And that's Alex Jones. That's who he is.
We try to. Now, we are just coming up to the end of the hour. I just want to quickly run through the questions that I want to talk about for the rest of the show. So with this alignment, with this real alignment of the gun lobby against the government really intent, we want to take the guns, people are talking about civil war. Alex Jones has used the word civil war. You've used the word civil war to me, John. Is there a possibility this could actually be what we're leading towards? Second question I want to ask, far even more important, what will Australia's future be if this happens and leads to a US collapse of power? And then I want to talk about what we can do in a situation where we do have to defend ourselves against either an invader or whether it is a tyrannical government. Can an armed population defend themselves? Can they shake off an invader? Can they do it with arms? Is that possible? Will that ever work? Because we've got so many examples of in history where it hasn't. It just leads to more tyranny. I mean, it's just again and again and again. It's led to just cycles of tyranny. But let's go into it in more depth. Let's actually talk about it, because, John, you've got a military background. I want to get actually into weapons, warfare techniques. But then I want to bring up the question of the alternatives to the use of force. Is there an alternative? Is there a better way? And is it possible to have a peaceful revolution? So that's what we're going to be talking about in the second hour. It's going to be really interesting. Don't go away. You're with Truth News Radio Australia.